If you have a retaining wall, how do you know it's doing its job? If you don't have one, how do you know if you need one? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We're going to talk about retaining walls. We'll find out how to build one and how to fix one. Also, how to figure out if your retaining wall is doing its job. Bill will also answer your questions about the home improvement projects you're working on. Send us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When we build our homes, we often have to transform the landscape to suit our needs, and that can create some problems. It can also sometimes create the need for a good retaining wall. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to give us a short course on retaining walls and, of course, to answer your questions as well. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Welcome back. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. I know you don't like me anymore, so I, went somewhere else.
Right. You're spending your summer in Minnesota. That doesn't create any scheduling problems.
No, none at all.
All right. Well, let's talk about retaining walls. How do you know you need one? What purpose do they serve?
Well, most of the time, if you have a steep slope on your property, or you want to maybe decorate it to have some differences, some different elevations, maybe you want some plantings, maybe you want to protect a tree, so that you have to put a retaining wall, maybe the outside of the drip ring, the leaf structure of the tree. Most of the time, it's because your lot may be sloping. Enough where maybe your driveway isn't going to be appropriate. You still want to have a good approach, and you want to keep it from maybe slipping off in the winter. So, hey, maybe you ought to put a retaining wall and actually hold the driveway up. And the funny thing about a retaining wall is you get on like House or whatever on your iPad, and you're looking at all the, man, those are really cool. But when you start thinking about how much they weigh and how much work there is, in fact, I'm going to be working on one tomorrow, and daughter and son-in-law, and I was going through the paperwork. I said, geez, 80 pounds a piece. Oh, my gosh, So and I calculated it up. We're going to have over 20 tons worth of just the concrete. So I'm hoping, boy, I hope son-in-law's brothers show up so that they can carry them, and I'll just say put it here. but there's
– So basically, it's to keep the soil in place.
Yes, to keep the soil in place. That's most of it to make your property more useful, because sometimes you may have to terrace, but by using retaining walls, so you may have planting beds, you may use it for maybe raising up and leveling part of your lot for either another building, maybe you want to put an outbuilding, maybe you want to have a play area. It really, what they do is they just improve the property to give you more level areas to use.
And when you decide where you want a retaining wall, do you need to calculate how much force will be on that wall and that kind of information?
When some of the walls that I've done in the past, especially in a lot of friends, is like natural field stone. I have a lot of those around my house, where some friends, when they'd be tearing up a basement, they just bring over a couple dump truck loads of that really cool stone, and then you're going through them and, oh, look at the veins, look at this. And then you try to move it and realize, that rock doesn't look like it weighs 4,000 pounds, but
maybe that looks nice right where it is.
But it really is. There's so many variations in the walls. And so, like natural stone, there's no real manual. There's books out there say how to do this, but everyone is different, and on all the soils are different. And so the point is, like, let's say you're doing these interlocking concrete ones, the ones that weigh 80 pounds, and you put rock in between them. When you really follow the directions, which you should, you know something's up when that manual to put up, you're thinking, okay, I'm just stacking block on top of each other. When the manual's 31 pages long, that there's some engineer that's gone through and figured these things. So it comes down to, first of all, what am I holding back? Is it sand? Is it gravel? Is it clay? Is it real wet? And then when you get towards the top, let's say you're building a wall that's 8 feet tall. is the ground atop it sloping towards the wall? Is there weight up there, and how much weight, and how close is it going to be to the wall? And you start looking at all the charts and where you have to reinforce this wall, and it's amazing how much engineering there is in these. I think a lot of times maybe TV kind of says, oh, we'll just throw this up and it looks pretty. When you get up over 4 feet, you're talking a lot of engineering, you know, especially like we just said, okay, if it goes 50 feet long and it's 8 feet high, there's 40,000 pounds just in the concrete block. And then you have the rock that goes at least 2 feet behind it. And then is the soil soft? Does it need, you know, it all needs to be compacted. And it's a lot of work and a lot of thinking, because when you drive around houses and subdivisions and you start looking at the retaining walls, at least 3/4 of them, if you really look at them, you're thinking, why is that gap in between that block bigger than the one next to it? Well, it's because it's failing, because somebody didn't do their research.
Well, this is a project that I think attracts a lot of DIYers. A lot of people think, I can put up a wall myself.
Sure.
So is that a misnomer?
Well, no. If it's short, it's easy. You know, okay. If you're going 2 to 3 feet. But yet I've seen 3-foot ones. You know, I've even done a couple that were 3-foot. And then I drive by it with my pickup, and all of a sudden, oh, that kind of truck's kind of tipping a little. And all of a sudden, you know, you look and the wall's moved. The thing is, a lot of the block have, especially if the interlock, is if you go up, let's say, a foot, it should be tipping back at least an inch. So if you go 8 feet tall, it should be tipped back roughly 8 inches. That's just kind of a rule of thumb. So building a straight wall going up, like stacking these 4-inch concrete ones, you know, you've got to realize that it's straight now. That's the best it's ever going to get. And it's going to constantly get worse because soil expands and contracts. So when soil expands, it pushes the block a little bit, maybe tilts it out. Well, the block's not coming back. So every year it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. So that's why you have to build in the tilt. And then you have to realize once the stone and or whatever you use is in place, you know, when it is in place, it has to go down the ground a ways to have, you know, some grip so the bottom can't blow out. So like if it's 8 feet tall, probably the minimum is, you know, at least 12 inches into the ground. So, you know, somebody that's cheap, you're going, wait a minute, if I'm going 60 feet, you know, I have $100 worth of block that I'm not seeing. You know how people would, well, why would I want to do that? Well, I'm going to set it right on top of the sod, and then they wonder why the thing blows over.
So if you're planning to put in a retention wall and you're planning to do it yourself, do you have some resources that you recommend a place to start to make sure you do it right?
Yes. You know, I would look at some of the bigger companies. You know, there's VersaBlock and Rockwood retaining walls. You know, they're companies that manufacture that. You know, so there's people all over the country that sell those particular block. You know, get on the internet or get in some books and really do a lot of research on what do you really want. Do you want something you yourself can do easy in a weekend, and then it'd be the little things, and how much am I holding, and what's the use? But the biggest thing is, do I want a concrete wall? Do I want a wood timber wall? What kind of wood? Do I want railroad ties? And I completely steer people away from railroad ties, because when I was in college, I worked on the railroad driving spikes for 2 summers. That explains a lot of things, doesn't it? That those railroad ties, you know, are covered with creosote, and there's nothing worse than creosote for kids or anybody else. I mean, that just burns. It's a terrible chemical. It lasts a long time, but it's terrible. Some of the treated timbers that we have, you know, you go out and get a big sale, let's say. You see in a flyer 6x6 landscape timbers, or these 3-inch by 3-inch landscape timbers, treated timbers. Look real close, and it will, you know, it'll say, you know, made for retaining walls, but then it's not to really be in ground. It can be in ground contact. Well, that doesn't really mean anything. You need something that's going to be in the ground, because one side will be, and it's taking on moisture. So there's different ratings on treated lumber, like 0.2, 0.4, 0.6. What you look for is something that's made to be in the ground forever. And those are going to be very expensive, and they're going to be very heavy because of the treatment that's in them. So,
all right. Well, it sounds like you lean toward the stone and the concrete.
Yeah, the concrete interlocking ones, you know, if they're great because they're engineered. The stone, when you do the stone, you don't want to go very high, because since you're just, you know, just dry stacking them, kind of fitting them to where they look pretty, you know, and everything, you got to remember the only thing holding them there is their weight. And there's no tying back into the ground. They're really hard to anchor. So very seldom do you see those over maybe 4 feet tall.
Right. So maybe those are more about what they look like than about the actual structure.
Yeah, and if you want something that's really good, you'll go with concrete. Solid concrete.
So we've talked about some of the things that you need to think about, making sure that it's anchored, building in a tilt. Let's say you move into a house that has a retaining wall. And over time, you're noticing cracks in your driveway. You're noticing that the retaining wall is changing. What are some of the signs that make you think, I need to get a contractor out here, or I need to do something to fix this wall?
If you, like, let's say you get on your driveway and you look, and there's a crack in the driveway that's parallel to that retaining wall, and there's no other cracks anywhere in that driveway, you know something's up. That over time it's dropped down. Now it may be because when they put the retaining wall in, and when they incorporated it with the driveway, that they didn't compact the soil underneath it. That's kind of common in Iowa. We tend to just haul in sand because it's cheap, or they call it pit run with sand with some clay in it, and they run over it with their skid loader. Well, skid loaders have flotation tires on them. That doesn't compact much. So you have to go back and think. When you see a big commercial project, when they compact soils, you know, you see these, like when you go down the highway, they see huge sheep's foot, they call them, these big, huge rollers with prongs on that compact the soil. They don't just, you know, do it over, say, 6 or 8 feet. They do it like in 8-inch layers. So when you're putting a wall together, you want to go in 8-inch layers. So if they didn't do that, now that wall may be falling in. And it's kind of funny. A lot of these walls range from maybe $10 to $20 a square foot as you look at the wall. Now, replacing it after somebody put it in wrong, it may be thousands more, because now you've got to tear the whole driveway out. Now you've got to tear out everything down to the bottom and rebuild it. So now you're doing sometimes three times the work. So if you're buying a house and it has a retaining wall, you may want to ask who did it and get a level out there. And use your eye.
And if there's a problem, you should ignore it as long as possible.
I move on to the next house, yeah. You know, hey, get a brother-in-law. You know what? This house is just for you.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. Then we'll come back and Bill will answer your questions about retaining walls or about any of the other projects in your life. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. That phone number again, 866-780-9100. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally with us today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he is ready to take your questions.
Woohoo! Let's go.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brian is on the line in Eldridge. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. My question is, first of all, let me describe the situation. We bought a brand new house 10 years ago in the backyard, which is at about a 30-degree slope. At the bottom of it is about a 70-foot-long retaining wall that's probably about 3.5 feet tall.
Okay.
Beautifully done. I mean, it aesthetically, whoever did it, I don't even know, it wasn't the actual contractor. But over the years, just because of, I suppose, pressure and rainfall and everything else, it's starting to lean kind of in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, all of the there's interlocking type, they're all holding their inch to inch and a half stack backwards, but the wall itself is actually leaning forward.
Sure,
It almost looks like it's like an optical illusion. It's I kind of... my son is just over the other day. He said, aren't you going to do something about that? And I'm almost inclined to wait until it falls, because either way, they're going to have to dig back and repair it.
Yeah.
I am not up to this task. I mean, I have never built one, and this one is too big, and it's, you know, it's going to cost a fortune, I'm sure. Any suggestions? I mean, do I just wait till it tumbles forward?
The waiting is the kind of the liability issue. You know, if it was me, it'd be just my luck, a neighbor dog or something would be walking by, you know. But it's better to take care of it maybe now, and I know only because what you'd probably do is, you know, you'd excavate back at least 2 feet back from it, and then pull all the block apart and then reset it, because since they're the interlocking ones, I'm guessing they're the interlocking ones that have you know, they got a little dog on the backside or in the center that hooks over the top of the previous layer, and then so that way that, you know, the block aren't slipping. So that's a quality block wall that you have, and that's why you say it. I've seen that. It's weird. It's like they started the first block off out of level or something. The whole thing tips, but yet it's. I know exactly what you're saying. You know, you're saying,
mm-hmm.
But I would take that, dig that out. You know, you can get a small, mini bobcat excavator. You know, with a little backhoe attachment on it or something, and some sources will say dig back 2 feet. Some say dig back 6 feet. If you dig back 6 feet, what you can do, since it's roughly, you know, 3 feet tall, is come up about halfway through the soil level, and then they make these textile fibers or fences. It almost looks like a plastic snow fence that they incorporate in when you lay, like, say, the second or third course. You lay this into the block, and then it goes back into the soil. And then when you put roughly 2 feet of rock behind this whole thing, then you tamp this into the soil as well. You know, it just acts like a dead man. That was what you would call it, but for the whole wall. And then that would hold it in place, because maybe they didn't do it that way back then because it's such a short wall.
Right. Okay. So
yeah.
That would be what would prevent this from happening a second time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not pushing brands or anything, but Rockwood Retaining Walls has a really good manual. That's the one I was saying was 31 pages, and it will show you, since that's sloping towards the wall, you know, they tell you exactly which course to put the fiber into. So, you know, I pull that up and research that manual, and then think about it, because it's just the liability side. That's the only downside. Otherwise, yeah, I'd wait for it too. But because, you know, I'd say, okay, if it falls over, at least I don't have to lift the block up now because they're all laying on the ground. But it's just that liability. You know, it's that liability side. That's the only thing.
So even if there's a neighborhood dog, I'd like to get rid of.
Yeah, we'll anyway. Talk about this after.
Yeah, you just said that on the radio, Brian. So
yeah,
I think you
good.
Better get it taken care of. All right, Brian, thanks a lot
thanks.
For your call.
And thank you so much.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks.
It.
You
bye.
Can ask your questions at 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this question from Sharon in Des Moines. We're thinking about getting new eaves. Oh, I'm sorry. She must have sent a link for a specific product, and I can't
okay.
see it. So we'll get to that question later. This one from Mike. We bought a house where the retaining wall was just stacked and never backfilled. It's a 5-foot wall and 75 feet long. I've taken the bricks down and need advice before building. Two questions. One, what kind of barrier to put behind the wall? Will professional grade weed barrier work? Two, what is required width for drainage gravel?
There, you know, that's a good question. There again, I would do a lot of research, because what you want to look at is what kind of soil again is behind it. If it's sloping towards a retaining wall, and I don't know if these blocks are flat, because a lot of them are sold that are flat, and then you just set them back. Sometimes they have little fiberglass pins in them. They're nightmares. And then some of them are glued, which, okay, now you're relying on the glue to last and the concrete to be dry when you do it. But, you know, what I would do is really do a lot of research on that one. But in those cases, if it's like a stacked one that doesn't have the dogs on the back to hold them in place, yes, you should be using probably some landscape fabric. And the commercial fabric usually does work. You know, don't buy the stuff that's 3 foot by 50 and all for 18 cents. That junk. You know, use the commercial, and then you may want to look at incorporating it on your site. You may want to incorporate, like, say, a 4-inch drainage tile that is sloping to daylight, even though, you know, when you use the right rock, should be like, say, a 3/4 clean rock. To be used as kind of tying everything together and as drainage. Depending on your site, you know, the rock will take the water away, but sometimes it can pool behind the block, or there may be some dirt depending on what's going on. It has to be able to get out. So sometimes you will see in certain cases where they take the drainage tile, put it all the way down to the bottom with rock and the filter fabric around it, and then they run a short length of tile that comes out of the block so that it can relieve that hydrostatic pressure, because a lot of times that's what takes the block out. You know, you have hydrostatic pressure from all the water in the soil, and then you have a hydraulic where that's just the soil pushing it. So in your case, I'd look at putting the tile, and I'd look at putting the fabric, and then I would get somebody that's very well-versed in whatever block you have and installing that in your conditions, and just get their advice. If it's a real long wall and there's maybe some structures or driveways there, a lot of times it is worth the money to bring an engineer in. Because, you know, it's a substantial amount of time, effort, and money, and it could be a safety issue as well. I just saw a couple years ago somebody stacked up a railroad tide wall. I swear it was 16 feet tall, and that thing fell over. If somebody would have been there, you know, it would have been tragic. And if there had been a car parked at the top of it, right, that, you know, as well. So a lot of times people shy away from hiring, you know, good professionals, you know, soil engineers and that. Sometimes you may want to do it.
All right. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, an opportunity for you to get a question answered by our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, 866-780-9100, or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. And we do have a couple lines open for you right now. Jane is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
My question regards wooden edging. Do you know where I can get treated wood, 1/2 inch by 4 inch, to be edging along gravel paths?
1/2 inch by 4 inch? And normally, you know, the lumber yards will carry that. But the one thing about, you know, that treated, the 1/2 inch by 4 inch, is it's kind of a specialty item. So if you want the 1/2 inch, a lot of times what people will have to do is buy 3/4 and then run it through a planer to get it down to 1/2 inch. If you're trying to get it into a certain, say, a shape or anything like that. So that's usually how it is. Now, when you get down to that type of wood, don't expect it to last, you know, more than maybe 6 or 8 years, even though it's treated.
Okay.
Because in order to get it to the treatment process of what you would, say, like a wood foundation, you wouldn't be able to afford it. I mean, it's just a ridiculous amount of money. You may want to look at, in depending where you're at, some landscapers are using white oak because it's available in Iowa. If it's from an older white oak tree, it's going to last as longer than treated.
So white oak untreated is just as good as the treated stuff.
It is today. People will argue, but if you put the two in the ground, the Iowa white oak is going to last a lot longer. But there again, it may be considerably more. And all you're probably going to see is that top 1/2 inch. So
sure.
Okay. Actually, metal would be the longest lasting.
Yeah, but it's not as aesthetically pleasing.
There you go. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Dale's on the line in Lone Tree. Hello, Dale.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a 70 by 40 gable roof that's 130 years old. It's all random width decking over millwall rafters.
Cool.
And it's got a couple layers of shingles on it, and I don't want to – what I'm thinking of is doing a polyol and isocyanate, you know, foam roof.
Sure.
It won't add any weight, and there's so many swales. The trusses are 18 feet apart, so it's got dips going that way, and then it's got dips from the ridge line down to the eaves.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, you know, rather, you know, I can't afford to tear it off or anything like that. But I'm told the foam will, you know, add a little bit of structural integrity to it and, you know, solve my leaking problem for 10, 20 years.
Well,
any comments?
how thick of How thick of isofoam did you want to put on there, too?
Well, they're going to do it in different, you know, they're going to take out some of the dips and build it up. I've got a little hip in the back, yeah, with the foam, and then cover it with elastomer.
Sure.
You know, coating on top.
Sure.
See, the decking on the roof is so bad, and it's so out of, you know, it's no longer a two-dimensional roof on each side.
Uh-huh.
There's just no way you can put fasteners into the decking to do metal or anything like that. And I've done,
because
it's, you know, it's like, it's 3,000 square foot of roof, and I'm afraid if wind gets underneath metal or something, it'll just peel it off like a sardine can.
You know, I'm afraid the same thing, and I wouldn't put that kind of money into that, me personally. I wouldn't put that kind of money into the foam on top of a structure that isn't secure. I would go, you know, I would go back, and I know you don't want to hear this, but I'd take those old shingles back. Or off. I'd make sure that roof was. I'd check all the framing members. Sister on new pieces if you had to. Bring it back to where it's substantially strong. I love that foam roof, and I love the waterproofing membrane that goes on top of it. I think it's great, but I'm nervous about putting that kind of money on top of a structure, even though there's little weight. But I'm nervous about putting it on top of something that. Isn't as good, I guess, in durability as what you're putting on top of it. I'd hate to see you make that big investment, and then you do get a big wind, and there's nothing to say that it just can't take that whole piece of foam roof off in one piece and just lay it out in the field. Because if you're trying to – something's got to hold the foam sheets down. Well, the blown foam, whatever it's attached to. I mean, something has to hold that down. If it isn't into something substantial, that also could lift off. But it's a beautiful system.
The foam does have some adhesive qualities that adhere to the roof, I'm told. So.
Well, you're told that, but it's only as good as what it's adhered to. If it's an old piece of wood that has any dirt to it, I mean, you know, think you know, that's what I've tried doing stuff like that, and that's why a lot of places now don't want you using even spray foam can and air sealing in an attic. Because, yeah, you spray it down, and it looks great, but it's adhering to dirt. And so you can lift it right back up.
What I've got now, I've been using a solvent-based elastomer membrane on top of the shingles.
Okay.
And that's been holding good for, 12 years, something like that. So that, I've got a good surface over the over the shingles. So
yeah.
But it's just starting to leak again because every little crack you get in that surface, I go up there with silicon and smear that on. But, you know,
It just keeps telegraphing through. Just, you know, yeah, every time I would just be nervous of investing that amount of money on a structure that, you know, hasn't been fixed up yet, I guess. That's, I just don't want to have a failure, you know.
Yeah, it's just going to cost so, you know, 3,000 square foot roof with trusses. I mean, you know, it'd be 10 to 20 times what the building's worth. So,
well, there you go.
Well,
yeah.
I wanted to know.
Yeah, it's a hard decision. I'm glad I'm not in your spot, I guess. It'd be tough. It really would, so.
All right, Dale.
Well, sorry I couldn't help you more on that.
Good luck with that. And let's go next to Rodney in Garden Grove. Hi, Rodney.
Yes, Bill.
Yes.
I'm thinking of building a new house, post-frame, and using the steel siding, you know, 3 foot wide by, you know, the wall height. And I'm familiar with all these products that house wrap, to let the house breathe, and I'm wondering if that's kind of a waste of money if you're putting steel on the outside anyway. I don't think that's very breathable.
No, there's, you know, when the house wraps first came out, most of them, you know, were designed strictly. The only thing they were to do was hold, keep air from moving back and forth getting into your house. Really what it does more is it provides another drainage plane because when moisture eventually, whether it's condensation, because of the temperature differences between the, you know, whatever you have behind the steel and the sun and moisture and all that, when you have condensation on the backside of that steel, you do not want it getting into the substrate, which on your building, I don't know if you're going to have oriented strand board, plywood, foam, whatever, any leaks or like that. This provides a protective barrier basically for that hard water, not the vapor, but the hard water from getting into that building structure. So actually I look at it more now as a drainage plane more than an air sealing. capabilities, because, you know, once you put steel siding on and you know, all the fasteners have, a rubber washer on them, and then if you put the, the rubber gasketing in each seam, I agree with you. That's, that steel's pretty much airtight. But it's that condensation, and that's – especially Iowa, this is the worst place in the United States to build, because we have all this hot, cold, wet, dry, and then all of a sudden it condenses behind the steel, and then if – I don't know what you're going to have behind it, but it can take out whatever you have. And I've got – tons of pictures of what it looks like, and it's not pretty.
Uh-huh.
What I'd be looking at it more as.
Okay, so the house wrap is a near essential thing to put on there.
Yes, right. And actually by code it's required as a secondary weather barrier.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You betcha.
All right, Rodney, thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back to answer more of your questions. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, you can also call 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. This is Talk of Iowa. Bill's hard to keep him quiet during the breaks. All right.
I'll answer that one.
All right.
Why do they have flare-ups?
Iowa Public Radio.
Whoops.
I'm Charity Nevy, here with home improvement expert Bill McAnally.
It's a heated discussion.
Mid-rant against flat roofs right now. All right. And we can answer your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. Bill, a few months ago, I guess now, you were talking about building a foundation with, you called it a frost-free foundation.
Right.
I'm thinking about a project where I build a Morton building home with radiant heat flooring, geothermal, and a frost-free foundation. What you just said to the fellow before that,
yep,
about the wrapping the house, my idea is to make a fairly tight envelope with the thing and make it very efficient.
Yep.
I think I've got a bad connection. I'm trying to remember everything. I'm going to take my answer off the air. How do I do this project? Who should I go talk to? I'm clueless.
You're in what town? Around Ames?
Des Moines, but I'm looking for a piece of property in the surrounding area.
Well, I can give you some names off the air who to talk to. I would check with Center on Sustainable Communities there in Des Moines. They have quite a few people there that would be able to help you on that. What utility company are you with?
Mid-America.
Okay. They also have some people on staff that may be able to help you. But I would start with Center on Sustainable Communities in the Des Moines area. There's a lot of people associated with them that love exactly what you're doing and have experience in it, can tell you what's working. I'm glad you called, because it's amazing how many homes in Iowa are doing exactly what you're doing. We're seeing so many more people kind of take a different approach. They're basically, what as city people would say, okay, you're taking the old pole barn ag building out there and you're turning it into a house, and they have
exactly
this.
Exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Except it's
going to
have a pool, Bill.
There you go. Hey, you know what? I got to get your number later here. but it's exact. There's no reason why not to build in this way. I mean, it's especially here in Iowa that some of them that we're seeing are just amazing. Beautiful homes but I would check with them first, and I would also go to Green Building Advisor. That's a really good website to go to, and then I would also go to Building Science Corporation.
Holy mackerel! Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, do you do this kind of work, don't you?
I have, yes. Yeah, I'm consulting on some projects like what you're talking about. I have a friend that has exactly what you're saying. But yeah, there's a lot of information on the internet now of exactly what you're doing.
Well, here's my problem. I don't want to take up too much time. I'm finding bits and pieces here and there, and
yeah,
people are talking numbers. And I'm an old sailor. I can sail a ship fine, but when it comes to building a house, I don't have a clue. So I need somebody to kind of crunch all those numbers for me.
Yes, then there's a really, I mean, there's a ton of really good builders in Des Moines. That you can get in contact. Try Cosk first, because there's three or four people there that would, you know, be able to advise you. Some builders that are members of that.
Okay, Dave. Good luck with that.
Yeah,
thanks
have
a lot
fun with
for your
that.
Call. And we'll go next to Carol in Dubuque. Hi, Carol. Carol, are you there?
Takes a while for the signal from Dubuque.
Right. Hi, Carol. What's your question?
Good morning.
Morning.
I have probably this. Show couldn't be more timely. I had someone build a retaining wall for me. I believe he did a good job because he put a concrete foundation, waited for the ground to settle after the roof was moved, and built the foundation and then the interlocking block. The highest point of it is about 2.5 feet high. So my question is, the area above it is quite a steep grade to it.
Okay.
I don't want to mow it. And I'm wondering what the recommendation for like ground covering plants or spreading shrubs to help retain that soil.
What I have on some of ours, what has worked, is kind of a sedum. What I like about it is that it spread fast. A friend of mine just gave me a couple little plants, and all of a sudden now the whole thing's covered. But it's a really nice ground cover, and then it flows over the top of the wall. I would look at that, but what you want is something that does, you know, that has really strong and deep root structure, but not large roots. Sometimes people will plant a bush that they keep pruning back, and of course the roots keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden then it is moving your wall. I wouldn't plant any trees there, but look at, you know, really like ivies and the sedums. That sedum is just gorgeous. I really like that. And it's easy to keep, you know, transplanting, you know, cutting, sectioning it off and moving it place to place. But that's what I would put there. Of course, my old favorite, Creeping Charlie, that's always a really, really good one. You can't kill that one.
Right. It certainly works everywhere.
Yeah, but that's what I would look at. The sedums are neat.
And Carol, if you're looking for more ideas, give us a call on Friday during Horticulture
Hey, there
Day.
You go.
And they will for sure be able to help you out.
Now, those guys are the plant geeks, so they'll be able to answer that.
Let's go next to Rachel in Newton. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a kind of a weird question. We have a walkway coming up to our house, and it looks like it's slowly sinking. And we've lost our grading, and every time it rains, that area floods. And if we get a heavy rain like we do, you know, the 100-year flood we ever have every, you
yeah.
know, every other year, then my basement gets wet. And so how do I fix this? We've tried putting in some French drain, and it just doesn't seem to be able to keep up with it. I've talked to a couple concrete guys about just ripping it out and pouring a new in there, but I don't know how best to handle that without completely losing some of the things I do like about the porch.
Okay, so there's the walkway then. Is all the soil in that sloping towards your porch then?
Yeah, well, the porch itself is concrete, and
okay.
That's kind of like the walkway area, and it's a 8 foot by 15 foot area.
Okay.
And it's the rebar that is in there has rusted through and is like sinking, and you can just kind of see where it's just not. There's obviously something in there that's not working right.
Right. I think I would have that. I would tear that up and see what's going on. Your walkway's sinking, so the walkway's sinking from right next to the porch. Then,
is well, what, that whole area is.
Okay.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I hate to say it, but geez, it's too bad messages today. You got to bite the bullet, you know, and tear it up and actually see what's going on, because I'd hate to see some long-term structural issues where, you know, something is going to give way. Because I don't, right. Not seeing it, I don't know what it's looking like. But I, you know, I'd hate to see something give way or transfer the water, maybe during another one of those, 100-year rains that we get, and move something somewhere else. I'd, you know, like a support post could give, a wall could give, basement right. walls. I would have somebody come in there and do some excavation, do some exploratory work to see what's going on, because When re-rod is starting to rust, and we've got a lot of water there. I mean, yeah. Just a little surface rust is one thing, but when it's starting to fail, there's a big issue there, and it may be time to actually repair the overall problem.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
All
right. Thanks a lot for your call, Rachel.
Yep. Oh, sure. Thank you. Yeah. Any good contractors out there that,
Yeah, the bad thing right now is everybody is so doggone busy, which is good, but if you want something done, it's hard to get them. I mean, you're looking months out. So I'd start calling
That's
right
good
now.
Good news. You're full of good news today.
Yeah, I'm full of good news today. Yep.
All right. Let's get through a few email questions. We heard from Sharon earlier, and I didn't have the information I needed. They're looking at foam inserts for their eaves, and she wonders what you think about foam inserts for eaves.
You know, I saw those the other day. Actually, in theory, they sound okay, but anytime you put something like foam out in the sun, they tend to break down. The ultraviolet light will take that foam and get it very brittle, and all of a sudden you've lost whatever, suction that it has. Because if it's the same ones I'm thinking that you're talking about, it looks like just a gutter-shaped piece of a sponge that they threw in there. And in theory, that sounds real good. But, if you lay a sponge out in the sun for very long, it gets brittle and it falls apart in little chunks.
All right. So you're skeptical.
I'm skeptical until I've seen it last for 10 years. Yeah. And if you fill your gutter up anyway, why do you need a gutter?
Well, all right. Okay. So if you install it, call us back in 10 years and let us know
see
how it works.
Yeah, but in theory, it sounds like it works. But
all right,
I don't know.
This is an email from Nikki. She says, "I live in a house that's nearly 100 years old and is a two-story. A few weeks ago, Bill had mentioned the venting in these houses might not be able to handle the updated heating and cooling systems, and I think this might be the problem in my house. The upstairs is hot when the main floor is cool, and vice versa. What's the process of replacing or updating the vents in an older home?"
Well, what it comes is the heating and cooling person that you have or can find. You want them to come in and take a look at the heating and cooling system you have right now. Let's say you put in a new furnace. A new furnace might be a 96% efficient, a real super duper deal. Well, you stick that underneath the ductwork that was put in, maybe 60 years ago. It might only operate at 40% efficiency, and all of a sudden your utility bills, they may even be higher. That's happened where you put in a high efficiency and all of a sudden your bills are higher because the ductwork has to be designed to fit that particular unit. And we've always done this kind of plug in a new furnace or a new, geothermal system and all this, but then we don't do the ductwork. What you want to do is you want to get a heating and cooling person that has gone through the SAVE program. The utility companies have sponsored this. It's a systems analysis verification of efficiency. I think that's what it was. I just kind of went blank on that. But ask if they've gone through the SAVE program and they're SAVE certified. They have experience in – it's called manual D. A manual D is when you have a heating and cooling system and the ductwork is designed – to get the amount of air to that room, because if it's properly designed, there's no reason that any of those rooms in that house, are any more than a couple degrees difference. They should be pretty much the same. And when you have these high and lows, it's the delivery system. And it could possibly even be your filter. If you have a 4-inch thick, super duper filter, that may be restricting so much air that the system can't move it. So there's a lot of things to ask that person in systems analysis and verification of efficiency. I don't know if that's what I said before, but.
And I don't know either.
Hey, there you go. I could have said anything. Yep. make sure that they've gone through that training because and that they know these things and not just, I it'll work. You know, just get a bigger fan. That's not the way to go. So, yeah, I think that's what you're probably going to have to do.
All right. James is on next from Des Moines. Hi, James.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have two 20 by 30 rooms. They're two-story I added on. And on the first floor where I have a hot tub, I put in a 4-inch exhaust outlet that I'll hook up with an exhaust fan with a little bulkhead over the hot tub.
Okay.
But on the second floor, which is going to have more sun exposure because the 30-foot faces the south and it's all glass.
Wow, okay.
I'm thinking about using a squirrel cage as a vent or as a fan to pull the moisture out of the second floor, the heat out of the second floor. Not much moisture, I'm hoping, but how far out do I have to vent that? And for a little more information, I built this with insulating concrete forms, with hardy plank, with impervia windows, so I have literally no wood
right.
except for the roof trusses and the floor trusses. So
okay. You know, you're going to have to look at something that is, I don't know how many cubic, you know, height and cubic footage and how much moisture there actually is. But you may be wanting it looking at something like, you know, an energy recovery ventilation system or a heat recovery ventilation system or the company Fantech. They make fans that are specific to what you're looking at, and they're all everything is all calculated out to exactly how many cubic feet per minute you're supposed to be moving, because you know you've got a good shell there, you know, with the insulated concrete forms. So we've got to be able to find the air to go out, and that's always kind of the tricky part when we do these shells so tight is. Whatever goes out, it has to come in from somewhere. And are we bringing in, say, cold air that's going to, you know, condense? Are we bringing in the summer even more humidity? So there's a lot to that. I would get with someone that is a ventilation specialist, or just start researching proper ventilation for high humidity areas. Because there's a lot of new equipment out there. There's one called Whisper Comfort. It's a low cubic foot, but it's more consistent. And they partner that with something called an air cycler. So it's nice that you're doing this now because there's a lot of new products coming on the market now that kind of pertain to specific situations like you have. You know, yours is, you know, like 1 out of 100 maybe, or 1 out of 500 situations. So, but they can gear that to you. There's a place in Minneapolis, Shelter Source. Call up there and ask them for their ventilation specialist. And
one
tell
quick,
them. Go ahead, because they'll help
more.
You too.
One quick question more. I don't have a way to condition the air in the summertime.
Okay.
Is there any product that I could put on? My central air is sized for the existing structure in this addition.
Sure.
Being as tight as it is, I don't need much conditioning. But
look for a mini split. Just call them a mini split. Fujitsu makes a good one. They're just a small heating and cooling, but you can get them also just cooling. But that would be the most effective thing for you is a mini split system.
All right, James, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks.
And Bill McAnally, thank you
Another
very much.
Another super day, thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We'll have him back again next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, our annual visit to the Iowa State Fair with Catherine Perkins and John Pemble. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.